Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
This is Through the Smoke, live at Firehouse Expo in Baltimore. I've got my guests, Captain Mike Dugan, Battalion Chief John Salka, and Lieutenant Mike Wilbur from FDNY. Mike Wilbur was also our keynote this week at Firehouse Expo. He talked a lot about firefighter safety. Who's in charge of your personal safety was your focus, right, Mike? Mike, who's in charge of your personal safety?
I am Chief Goldfeder.
You changed my life again. Mike credited the National Forum Firefighters initiatives for lowering firefighter fatalities in 2005 to double digits for the first time in a long time. But he amended that. The fact of the matter is it's still unacceptably high. He talked about how firefighters' lives are lost so unnecessarily. And although we're all heroes when we join the fire department, so few truly die in heroic ways when they die in the line of duty. Mike vigorously pushed the practice of placing firefighters who die on duty for health reasons or driving mishaps in the same boat as those who lost their lives, such as Kevin Apuzio, I think you talked about, died in New Jersey, the 343 firefighters who died in New York City, and so many others. Unlike a pair of his own firefighters in 27 Truck who lost their lives jumping from the fourth floor of a building fire, Mike made very clear that being shot out of a fire truck does not make one a hero. Eating 3 dozen donuts does not make one a hero, and pushing the accelerator of an engine too hard does not make one a hero. So Mike, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you. You've been a firefighter for 28 years? 28 years?
30 right? years in the volunteer sector, and 25, just had my 25th anniversary, July 11th.
Well, you need to update your firehouse.com bio. It's 4 years old.
Okay.
And as those of you listening online can hear, we've got a live audience. Audience, say hi.
Hi.
Okay, go back to the bar. Mike was with Ladder 56, started as an apparatus operator, and became lieutenant. He's the 27 truck. How long are you 27 truck now?
10 years.
And he serves on the FDNY Apparatus Purchasing Committee, and he's also involved in FDNY chauffeur training. Mike's a contributing editor for Firehouse Magazine and Firehouse Journal. He's served on numerous committees, and he's nationally recognized in vehicle fire apparatus and emergency vehicle operations. Mike has a website, emergencyvehicleresponse.com, of which we will have this posted on your in front of you. If you look down on your computer watching this show, you'll see a link to Mike's website. Speaking of websites, Five Alarm Leadership, www.5alarm, and that's the word five spelt out, fivealarmleadership.com. That's John Salka with us today. John's got, how many years do you have on the job?
27.
Okay, this is 2 years old. And John's a battalion chief. He's the commanding officer of the 18th Battalion in the Bronx and served on several of FDNY's busiest and most active units. His tenure as an officer in departments including instructing at the Probationary Firefighter School, Captain's Management Program, and the BC's Command Course. Chief Salk has been decorated for bravery numerous times over his 20-plus years on the job and was part of the Incident Command Team at the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001, and weeks and months following. John, his most, I would say probably his greatest accomplishment most recently is his book, First In, Last Out, Leadership Lessons from the New York Fire Department. And that's published by Penguin Books. And his leadership lessons were also taught throughout this. Basically, if you've been to John's seminars, you need the book. If you've read the book, you need to go to John's seminars. They go hand in hand. And it really is a great book, not only for the fire service, but for the business community as well. And I think that's what your goal was, to bridge some of the things you've learned as a chief and what you share there. Thanks for being here, John.
Thank you.
And last but not least, Mike Dugan. How long on the job, Mike?
22 years.
Okay, it says you're there 17 years. We have a lot of work to do. Mike is captain of Ladder 123 in Brooklyn's Crown Heights. He's a former volunteer firefighter in a Hillside Fire Department in Long Island. I should mention also that John is still an active volunteer firefighter upstate New York in South Blooming Grove and an ex-chief. And Mike, you're an ex-officer with Howells?
With Otisville.
Otisville Fire Department upstate New York as well. Mike's been involved in the fire service for over 30 years. He is a hot instructor at Firehouse Expo. Mike Dugan is also a contributing editor of Firehouse Magazine. And while assigned as a firefighter in Ladder Company 43, Captain Dugan received the James Gordon Bennett Medal in 1992 and the Harry M. Archer Medal in 1993. And those are the amongst the highest awards for bravery in the New York City Fire Department. So it's a pleasure to have you guys here. Again, you're listening to Through the Smoke live at Firehouse Expo in Baltimore. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. Our producer, Eric Smith, and his co-producers, Chris, how the hell does this tape recorder work, Hebert, and Pete, living in Maryland, is not living in Long Island, Matthews, a big hand for our producers as well. As we typically do in Through the Smoke, we're going to take a look at some current events and just sort of share some of the facts as well as some opinion. The Marshall County, Alabama community is mourning the death of a 17-year-old junior firefighter who was killed Wednesday night when the apparatus answering an alarm lost its brakes, smashed through the railing of a single-lane bridge, and tumbled 40 feet into a creek. Aletha Faye Nixon was killed when the truck tumbled over the first of two bridges around 7 p.m. Three other firefighters, including Nixon's older brother, were injured. It should be noted that I spoke to the fire department yesterday, and this was an apparatus with two doors, and four of them were riding in the apparatus. Lots of people, of course, you know, it takes a death for people to say so many wonderful things about her. So I'm going to skip some of these comments, although a wonderful girl, she loved the excitement, she was a go-getter, such an awful thing to happen. The truck was answering a call to a house fire when the brakes failed. The driver prevented the truck from running off a narrow winding road that leads to the bridge, but once on the bridge, the speeding truck's momentum increased by 2,000 gallons of water, caused it to crush the bridge's metal guardrail and fall into a creek. Nixon's older brother, 21-year-old Chris, was taken to University Hospital in Birmingham. Chris has a broken back, second-degree burns from fire fueled by the vehicle's spilled motor oil, and another firefighter was burned as well. So our hearts and prayers go out to the folks of the Asbury Volunteer Fire Department in Alabama as they work their way through a very, very tragic situation. It should be noted that originally the comments were that Alethea was the driver. She's not. And here's an update on their injuries as well. Chris Graves is in Huntsville Hospital with serious head trauma, and Chris Nixon is a UAB in Birmingham with burn injuries and internal injuries, but apparently they are improving today. Asbury firefighter Aletha Faye Nixon, as I said, age 17, was not driving as initially reported. We also have a link on your computers there to www.asburyfire.com for updates. And again, please keep the families of these firefighters in your prayers. A little commentary, not specific to that incident, but the question is, who are you riding with? Well, there's no doubt that apparatus safety and the safety of firefighters riding the apparatus is more prominent than ever, thanks to people like our panel, Mike, and John, and particularly Mike Wilbur, who gets beyond passionate when it comes to apparatus. On a very serious note, I want the audience to know, Mike was doing real happy, positive. Look at his face. This shit kills him. I'm telling you. Every time he hears about an unnecessary death like this, it rips all our hearts out. But I don't know many more than Mike Wilbur who get all stressed over this issue. Because it's unnecessary, it doesn't have to happen. Naturally, the issues of who is driving your apparatus is worth thinking about. Who are the drivers at your apparatus or of your apparatus at your fire department? What are their qualifications? How were and how are they trained? How experienced are they at driving anything? Are they sober? Do you know where the brake pedal is? Do they know where the brake pedal is? Are they excitable? Do your drivers spend more time watching NASCAR than attending driver training? It's stuff worth thinking about. Every time you get on the apparatus, it's basically up to your driver to get you home safely. And it's scary when we see stories like this about how much more potential for this is to be out there. Mike, apparatus driver training, is it a problem?
In some places, Billy, it's non-existent. What's interesting is that the things that we do the most, we train on the least, and the things that we use the most, we train on the least, and the things we use the least, we train on the most.
I mean, like right now, you can for free, the feds will send you to New Mexico or Arizona or Nevada, and you can get WMD training.
Absolutely.
But where can you go for free driver training? Nowhere.
Right. So that's exactly it. And if you look at our audience, a listening audience and live audience, you know, what did you do in your last training session, your last drill period? You know, you may have trained on the saw or the hearse tool or maybe you stretched a line. Well, in your next run, you may or may not stretch a line, you may or may not use a Hearst tool, you may or may not even take the SCBA off the truck. But on every run, somebody has to get behind the wheel of something and get everybody there safely, and we just don't train to that level.
Well, and you know, your family, your friends, and your loved ones want to have to trust the drivers of your apparatus. We really don't think much about that sometimes.
And interesting to know also, how many departments have that one person that nobody wants to ride with, but yet nobody will do anything about it?
Yeah, you think about, what was that, in Wyoming a couple years ago, Andy Huber, young girl, pager goes off, she gets to the firehouse. The driver was a known drunk. And I'm very familiar with AA and many issues related to that, very close to me. So I'm not busting anybody. But the fact of the matter is, that's what it is. And this guy had a long history of driver training, driver problems.
Right. He had two DWI convictions at the time of the incident.
And he's still driving the apparatus.
Was still driving the apparatus, was serving weekends in jail because he failed to fulfill the obligation of his probation on his last DWI conviction, and he slugged a county fire marshal at the scene of a fire 6 months prior and had a charge of assault labeled against him, and then it was kind of whitewashed and it went away. The town drunk was allowed to ride and drive a fire truck and kill this poor explorer.
Her pager goes off, she jumps in her car, races to the firehouse like many of you do, gets in the rig. He takes off with her in the apparatus. He overcompensates on a curb or on a turn because he was drunk. Rolls the rig. She gets ejected and crushes her, and she's dead.
You know what he said first? A moose popped out, and that's
yeah,
why he had to swerve.
Right. But it's your family and friends that have to trust the people driving. And then, of course, there's the issue of us taking care of ourselves when we get in and on apparatus. How much of the stuff in your cab will go flying around if something bad happens? Is all the stuff in your apparatus secure? How about the brothers and sisters riding? Will they get ejected if something goes wrong? And then there's this issue. A very recent NIOSH firefighter fatality report covered the death of Polk County, Florida firefighter. Polk County firefighter EMT Ben Lang, age 22, died while assisting the local non-fire EMS service with the transport of a patient to the hospital. He was located in the back of a non-fire department ambulance when the ambulance struck a large tree. In other words, he was on the scene. The EMS crew said, hey, we need you to give us a hand. They jumped in. And Ben jumped in, and that was the end of it. It's important to note that this firefighter was riding in an ambulance operated by a third service public EMS agency with this county, not a vehicle under the authority of the fire department or the fire chief. The NIOSH report identifies worn tire, speed, and driver training as noteworthy. This got me thinking. While the fire department chief and members are clearly responsible for the maintenance of the fire department vehicles, shouldn't we be concerned when firefighters who are on duty are regularly assigned to ride in on an ambulance or a related vehicle where the fire chief and that fire department are not responsible for the vehicle or the person riding it or driving it? In other words, the risk of placing firefighters in vehicles of other agencies with drivers not under their command is one that should be strongly evaluated by every one of us. Sure, if the EMS or ambulance service you assist does have a good driver training program, a good screening program, safe vehicles, and safe enforced practices, then the risk is much lower. But what if they don't? What if the EMS or ambulance service in your community that your firefighters ride with have no driver training program, no personnel screening program, and a poor ambulance maintenance program? As tough as it is for chiefs, commissioners, and presidents, whether it be local unions or volunteer association presidents, to keep your members safe within the fire department environment, this may be an area of added risk worth thinking about. Who are your firefighters riding with? It's worth thinking about. Another story we're looking at, this one here I just shared with a couple of our panelists. This just came out. And this one, I'll let you reach your own conclusion. Let me share it with you. Firefighters survived being trapped in a burning home. Cindy Shunke is a fighter. The Community Fire Protection District of Missouri firefighter was severely burned and reported left for dead on the job last March. It happened while Shunke was battling a house fire in Vineta Terrace. The 77-year-old homeowner died in that fire. Shunke was inside the main floor when it collapsed and she fell 12 feet into the basement. Quote, I landed on the fire and the wires. I was burning and being electrocuted, said firefighter Shunke. She has severe burns to her fingers, arms, legs, and feet. A fellow firefighter tried to reach for her, but Shunke's glove fell off and the firefighter was out of air. Shunke was trapped alone in the burning basement. Nobody came back to help me or anything, I heard them say. There's nothing we can do. She's going to die, is what the quotes are here. I was like, I can't die here. I can't die like this, said firefighter Shunke. Even though her mask was completely black, Shunky saw a ray of light through a small hole. Shunky was severely burned and somehow was able to pull himself through a window. Months later, Shunky's physical and emotional scars have yet to heal. Every day is a struggle. Quote, the struggle is so bad, the pain is unbearable, said Shunky. At one point, she was trapped in a fire. She thought about taking off her mask and taking her own life. Shunky has hired an attorney because she believes someone needs to be held accountable for her injuries. Quote, no one came back to help me, but I'm fortunate I got out alive. Shunky said with tears filling her eyes. Shunky attends physical therapy 3 times a week. She credits loving friends and family with helping her recover. The reason I bring this up is I'm not aware. Now in Canada, I am more aware of a situation where the Workers' Compensation Board is holding the chief, the deputy chief in the city liable for the death of a firefighter. But I'm not aware of a firefighter seriously injured or injured of any kind, especially serious, as our sister Cindy Shunky was, where the firefighter is now suing or retaining an attorney, which implies to me a lawsuit, where this firefighter, it appears from this article, and that's all my facts, is this article, that she's going to take legal action toward her fire department for not saving her life. That opens up a whole new chapter in the fire service as far as I'm concerned. And frankly, it makes me nervous in a whole different bunch of ways. It makes me nervous that this is one of our own and that she feels that she was abandoned. Was she abandoned? I don't know. That's a big question. I know a lot of firefighters in that area. I'm shocked to read a statement that firefighters would say, and I'm not doubting it, I'm just saying I'm shocked to read the statement that the comments were, quote, there's nothing we can do, she's going to die. I work with firefighters a long time. Between all of us in this panel, there's 130, 140 years up here of experience. With all of you, there's thousands of years. And it shook me when I read this. This was easily, holy shit. I read it 4 times to make sure I understood what I was reading. And it really does create a whole different avenue. It creates an avenue for fire chiefs. Holy crow, if something doesn't go right, might I be sued? Will this become a standard in law? Who knows where this is going to go? Certainly people have the right to sue, but it really just kind of shook me. Maybe some comments from you guys.
I think first off that she's suing. If she sues the chief, the members, how many people were on the scene? Was there a rapid intervention team? Were they committed? What, all of that has to be answered. And the other thing is, she volunteered or was paid, I don't know whether
it's paid.
Okay, career firefighter, she took the job. It's one of the risks you take when you take the job.
We're never going to take the risk, take all the risk out of the job.
Absolutely not.
John, you teach a program that's easily one of the most recognized nationally called Get Out Alive, and it's interesting, those are the exact quotes that are in here. Maybe some thoughts from you.
Well, the fact that she feels that nobody came to rescue her, didn't feel, obviously that's a fact that nobody did rescue her, she got herself out. Those comments, although I haven't read that, are people saying, oh, well, you know, there's nothing we can do, she's going to die. That's pretty, everybody in here, anybody listening would agree that that's pretty lame. I mean, that's the whole idea behind, not necessarily my class, Get Out Alive, but certainly the RIT concept, the rapid intervention teams, of having a couple of folks there, 2 in, 2 out. So many things we do in the fire service now revolve around survival and saving our own and protecting our own. The fact that this firefighter, you know, fell through a floor and was, I guess, left, I hate to, you know, make statements that sound firm, but from what you said.
Well, really, I mean, she went through hell, there's no question.
Right. Well, the fact that she went through hell is neither here nor there. The fact that they didn't go and get her is the issue.
Right.
And said they weren't going to get her is the issue. That's supposed to be, I mean, if anybody was listening to Black Friday last night, the fellas from the FDNY, how important the Brotherhood was and how the efforts that everybody made to save them and rescue them when they were in trouble, and we've seen stories like that all over the country, but that's certainly a black eye on the fire service, that incident.
If that is in fact true, that is truly of grave concern that one member would turn on other members or that members would leave a member is just beyond belief.
Well, that an environment was created where someone felt they had to take this kind of action.
Absolutely. So.
And again, one of the other things with that is in there it says that the man who tried to rescue her with the glove on when her glove fell off was out of air.
It was an attempted rescue.
It was an attempted rescue and he's now out of air. Again,
from what we read
here, but... Sure. Again, every once in a while we have to say, listen, where there's one of us in there, or are there going to be four or five of us in there? And if she fell through the floor, what's the conditions of the floor there as the members are trying to rescue her around that? Maybe they were outside trying to find another way in, and she didn't realize this fact. And again, I don't know because we weren't there.
Another good fire like that, a fire story, and I think you're well familiar with it, was in Massachusetts, in Worcester, where firefighters continued to go in and then finally somebody said...
Well, Mike McNamee said, that's it. He saved lives.
Yes.
He saved lives.
And they hated him for it for a while.
You're listening to Through the Smoke, live at Firehouse Expo in Baltimore. We'll be right back.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
We're back. This is Through the Smoke. I'm your host, Barry Goldfeder, with our guests this week, Mike Dugan, John Salka, and Mike Wilbur, and a live audience in Baltimore. Say hello.
Hello.
There they are. Okay, back from the bar already. We've covered a couple items already, some pretty serious items, obviously, this afternoon. And one member of the audience wanted to comment or offer some suggestion or question, perhaps. Come on up. You can tell us who you are. You don't have to tell us who you are.
I'm Bob Reynolds. I'm assistant chief with a small department upstate New York, a volunteer fire department. You're talking about driver certification, which right now is a hot topic in our fire department as we speak. We have no technical training or anything like that. It almost ties in both of your stories that you're talking about with the sister firefighter that was hurt also and possibly suing. I think it's only a matter of time before we have a lawsuit against our fire departments because we don't have a qualified driver, or we're looking past the guy that maybe has an alcohol abuse problem or something like that, and we don't address it. Sooner or later, it's going to come back to bite us.
Does your fire department have beer in the firehouse? You have booze, any kind of booze?
Yes, we do, but it's not like it was years ago. Right. As a matter of fact, we don't even turn it on after a drill or anything anymore. It's just basically for social
audience functions. Members, just a show of hands, how many of you still have alcohol in the firehouse? About a quarter of them for the radio listening audience who can't see those hands. Okay.
So I have a question of the question. Your rank was what?
Assistant chief.
What's my next comment? Fix it, man. You're in charge, aren't you?
We're addressing that. That's what we're doing right now.
Absolutely.
That's exactly. That's why I'm here.
It's not easy. It really isn't. I mean, the volunteer fire service, as all of you have, you know, you're elected. And we're going to be touching on it in just a little while. So your election may be qualifications, or maybe you're a good guy. As a friend of mine in New Jersey was telling me just yesterday, they had a very terrible fire in New Jersey in the past year. It was a big explosion, gas leak and stuff. People were killed. And now they're going after the fire chief, a great guy. But they're digging into the bowels of that fire department now, looking at training records, looking at qualifications. It's a mess.
As they should.
Absolutely, it's time.
Well, and there's some other
issues. Go ahead, Mike. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to address that only because of the driving issues. And you're from New York State. And we've been trying to tell people and give people the heads up. For years business, 30 years ago, you took a fire truck and ran over the mayor's daughter in town. Nobody would much care, except maybe the mayor, if you liked his daughter.
Give you an award.
Yeah, could be. Now, you get in any kind of incident with the truck, you put yourself, your department, the chief, the commissioners, whoever runs your organization, at risk. And in New York, it becomes more poignant, because if we go back through history, we find out that there was this little training mishap in Lairdsville, New York. And for the first time in the U.S. Fire Service history, an NFPA standard was used in part to put one of us in jail. And of course, in that case, they just took the live burn standard and didn't follow any of it.
For background, the assistant chief was charged with manslaughter.
Yes.
For allowing a firefighter, a real live firefighter, to be a victim in a training burn, correct?
Yes, who had just gotten his gear that day.
So here, Proby, you're the victim, get inside, and then the kid died.
First drill, new gear, that day, go upstairs and play dummy.
And he was above the fire?
Above the fire. And they lit a fire underneath him. No ladders, the windows were boarded up, there was no water supply. I mean, we broke 9 out of 10 of the NFPA commandments on live fire training, and he had the 10th one on the critical list. And so the reality is that he deserved what he got, and so forth and so on. But now if we take that one step further with the NFPA standards, okay, the standard says that you, as the driver, are responsible for making sure that everybody is seated and belted in the truck, and that you cannot put the truck in any gear until you, the driver, make sure that everybody is dressed, seated, and belted. So I ask now, is it a stretch to take a driver who had somebody fall out of their truck and criminally charge them under the standard? And if you get some zealous ADA or somebody running for election or the political climate's right, the court precedent has already been set because we've used the standard to put one of us in jail. I think it's a big wake-up call.
And as the chief officer, as Chief Salka had mentioned, your job to fix it. One of the easiest ways I found in the volunteer fire service to fix it is you go to all your drivers and say, listen, we're implementing a new program. Would you do me a favor and step up to the plate and agree to qualify on this? And anybody who doesn't, guess what? You don't want them driving. Okay, the guys will say, sure, not a problem. I'm good, I'll qualify on all four or five trucks, whatever you have. I'll qualify, I'll be good, I'll understand everything. And the guys who don't, again, they don't deserve to drive. And I've been there, I've seen a guy get into a fire truck, get it started, and fall out because he was under the weather. He had consumed way too much. Okay, and he thought he was going to take a truck to this. Thank God he didn't get it in gear. Okay, it has happened. So, again, you've got to, as the chief officer, you've got to set your standard. And if you go up to your people and say, as the chief, I want to set this because if your son, your daughter, your niece, your nephew is riding on that rig, you want them safe.
And doesn't the New York State Office of Fire Prevention Control still provide a emergency vehicle operations class?
Yeah, that was just basically revised, but I think more to the question that you were asking, who is the head trainer that certifies those trainers that certifies those trainers that certifies those
exactly.
trainers, and then it filters down to the local jurisdiction. And the reality is that there's just simply no one, okay? The federal government adopted a driving class that was originally written by VFIS, and the last count I knew, 26 out of the 26 states have adopted that in some manner, in part or in whole, as well, and they work off of that to train drivers.
But doesn't the New York State class exist, emergency vehicle operator?
Yeah, the New York
isn't that a valid class?
For the state of New York, it is.
But that's not driving a big truck. I mean, if you're driving a tractor trailer or something, you have to have a CDL license.
Right.
New York State, all you need is a regular license. You don't need a CDL.
But you're still talking about a much bigger issue that you and I are probably not going to solve. Does anybody in your fire department, any of the chauffeurs, any of the drivers, have the New York State Emergency Vehicle Operations
yes.
training class?
Yes.
Do they all have it? Do they require to have it?
I believe almost all of them have it. We are requiring it now. If you want to be a driver on any big piece of apparatus, you have to have that.
Now, let me first say, I don't know shit about this. So my comments can be taken however they want. I'm not an emergency vehicle operation trainer. I took the class, I think, with you 10 years ago, or 100 years ago. I don't practice that. But the fact of the matter is, I see you in pretty good shape. If you're making the people that are driving
you. If you've ever seen this course, it's a joke. The emergency vehicle operation course is a joke as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I took it wasn't a joke. Was it?
Well, You're the guy, man. What I teach and what the state of New York now chooses to teach are two separate and distinct things. My course available privately is 18 hours worth of training, and we actually take people outside for 3 hours and drive with them.
Didn't we go outside? Who was that trooper?
Bob Four.
Bob Four. That's the class you and I took 100 years ago.
Yeah, right.
And there was driving involved, and there was liability discussions involved, and
was there a pass fail on it?
At that time, no. No, there was none.
So you complete the course, you're considered you're a driver.
Well, but it depends. I mean, for some reason, I'm thinking about this. In New York State, a volunteer firefighter can have a blue light if the chief says so. At your fire department, you can drive if the chief says so. The chief and the commissioners have to decide what level of training they're going to require their drivers. Tell everybody by April 1st of 2007, you're going to have this. You can't drive my trucks. And that's it. These are my trucks. I'm letting you drive them.
A good place to start, really, are the four standards that the NFPA puts out that in some part or whole address the driving issues. Okay, 1901 is the automotive standard that addresses the trucks and some seat belts and some safety issues. Okay, 1500 health and safety, there's some driver issues in there as well. 1451 is the risk management program that the NFPA put together. It talks about training, how often to train, who trains. It talks about drug and alcohol random testing. It talks to issues like that, and that may be helpful as you write your procedures. And then the last standard, of course, is 1002, which is the National Driving Certification Standard for all apparatus operators. And if you take those books and you sit down with your group and your fire department, you're going to be able to write a pretty good set of procedures, and you're going to have a pretty good driver training program following those ideas as a model.
And we have a link to your website also, Mike, right? Yeah. Here on all you are looking at the show, you click down below emergencyvehiclerespondents.com, and Mike, you'll hook them up with whatever standards you need.
And I have a few more things to say.
I'm actually going to contact them about doing
this. So this really brings up two issues. The one issue is driving, okay, and certification and training and liability. And the second issue really is training, right? It's just training in general.
Yes.
What fire department are you from?
Montgomery.
Montgomery, New York?
Yes.
Montgomery, Lemmy Grove, Montgomery?
Yes.
Okay. How many days a week, how many hours a week? What's your training schedule? A night per week, is it?
Yes, every Tuesday evening.
Every Tuesday evening,
7 to 10 p.m. at least. That's the minimum.
Oh, yeah, that's what it is in my volunteer fire department. Lots of other places. Everybody here, like a weekend morning or a weekday evening your weekly training session. So we're looking at three a month, probably, because one of them is probably the company meeting, right?
No, ours is
a separate one. So you're different.
We dedicated
from
most. Just to
most places have three a month, and the fourth Wednesday or the fourth Monday is the.
We have
is
a day
meeting.
And night on Tuesday.
So my argument is, I'm not yelling at you, and I'm not yelling at all actually yet. But we don't do enough training to start with. 1403 and 1055 and 1962 and 1492 and all this other crap is wonderful about driving, and I'm not mocking Mike because I love Mike and all his driving shit, but. What are the standards on cutting a roof? What are the standards on stretching a hose line? What are the standards on incident command? What are the standards on hose tool operations? I hope somebody else is going to come up here and ask about training on all that crap, because that's all live stuff too. And I'm not knocking your driving stuff, but people do that shit wrong too. You know, so there's a lot of stuff to worry about. It's not just training. It's not just. Now let me get off you for a minute. And the NFPA standard that says the driver is responsible for the four people or the six people on the apparatus? Horseshit. That's baloney. What does the fire department do? The fire department says the guy that beats the horn is in charge, right? The office is in charge.
Built
how can
the
NFPA,
yeah.
Well, we know how the NFPA can do that. Well, they shine their shoes, they made that law. The NFPA says the driver's responsible for people falling out of apparatus. Absolute,
yeah.
What's the word, Mike? Is it nonsense? The driver's responsible for people falling out of fire trucks?
One of the things that we did, yes, it's nonsense. And one of the things that we did yesterday, and we really want to get this point across, we are all big boys and girls in this industry. Nobody should have to tell you to put a seatbelt on. Nobody should have to tell you to put your gloves on. Nobody should have to tell you to follow the direction of superior officers. That should be understood. And we need you to get to buy into the fact that you are in charge of your own personal safety, and that your ability to go do this kind of work and to come back to your families in one piece is absolutely paramount, so that you don't become a statistic and you don't become a line of duty death.
Good stuff. Yeah. Appreciate your comments there. Now, last comment before we get into some even more hot stuff. If you read any paper in the country within the last week, you saw the United Press International and the AP clip that went around saying, firefighters top list is most prestigious occupation. Firefighters, doctors, and nurses are viewed by U.S. adults as the most prestigious occupation an individual can have, with firefighters being on top. Well, then why the hell aren't the politicians paying attention? Why are half you people in this room frying fish, passing boots out to raise money, riding on shit apparatus, using old gear, and we're the most prestigious occupation? It doesn't make much sense to me. You're listening to Through the Smoke, live at firehouse.com, live at Firehouse Expo on firehouse.com. We're going to be back in just a few seconds. We got some good stuff to talk about, particularly some interest in the volunteer fire service, as well as what's good and what's bad about being a firefighter in your fire department. We'll be right back.
Is it sometimes a little hard to see through the smoke? Do fire service, rescue, and EMS issues work you up just a bit? Maybe more than just a bit? If they don't, check your pulse. It's normal for firefighters and responders to get worked up over hot issues when you love the job so much. Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, Firehouse.com commentator and Firehouse Magazine columnist, hosts Through the Smoke, an internet broadcast and podcast that addresses issues impacting all firefighters, such as safety, health, and morale. Don't ignore the issues and maintain the status quo. Take an interest in issues that impact you, the frontline responder. Join Billy, special guests, and firefighters around the country and the world regularly on Through the Smoke, only on Firehouse.com.
This is Through the Smoke, live at Firehouse Expo in Baltimore. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder, with our guests this week, Mike Dugan, John Salka, and Mike Wilbur from New York City. Just a note to those of you that listen to our show, a big thank you. We were notified the other day that we've exceeded 100,000 downloads of episodes of Through the Smoke. Thank you very much. Outstanding. Also, I want to mention, reach out, and our hearts go out and our prayers and thoughts go out to FDNY Manhattan Rescue 1 firefighters John Walters. John Walters, a personal friend of mine, and Mike Shunk, who were both hit by an out-of-control taxi cab a week ago Wednesday. Unfortunately, John has lost one of his legs, but it will lead to a much healthier recovery for him. Mike has been released from the hospital and is recovering at home. So again, our prayers go out to John and Mike. And again, a serious, serious reminder, the civilians are out to hit you. I'm not implying this guy meant to hit anybody, but we have to act as if every driver on a roadway, whether you're in a residential neighborhood or you're on an interstate, is out to get you. With that attitude, set up your apparatus, block the highway, take the biggest rig you have, whatever it takes, working with your cops or without your cops if they don't work with you, and block and protect your personnel. So again, our thoughts and prayers out to both John and Mike on their quick recovery. Oh, look, we have a special guest who's walked in the room. IAFC President Bill Killen. Welcome, Bill. How about some words for the audience, Bill? I know you're a big fan of the show. You've been on several times. We sure love the work you're doing at the IFC. In your term this year, I'm losing count of all the things that you're accomplishing, primarily in the area of firefighter survival and safety, and also the deep interest you've taken in the firefighters and the loss they've suffered down in the Gulf following Katrina. How about a couple quick words for us?
Thank you, Billy. And listen, it's not me. It's the IAFC team, and I just get to be the leader of the team this year. Got a great team. I really enjoyed the previous discussion. I'm sorry I didn't get here for earlier parts of it, but I wanted to share some information. Driving is so important. It's so critical, and it's probably the most important job in the fire department, because if we can't get our people to the emergency, we can't do our jobs. And I want to share with you the fact that the Department of Defense Fire Academy has developed a complete, probably the most comprehensive certification training program in accordance with the NFPA standards, and they have, I think, four certification programs for driver.
It should be noted that you're the retired fire chief of the United States Naval Fire Service as well.
Well, that was another life, yes. I believe it's a driver operator pump operator, driver operator ladder, driver operator ARF, and I think there's one more. And in the Department of Defense, in the military, and in the civilian ranks, you cannot apply for a promotion to driver unless you possess the certifications and before you can even apply for the position. Now, this thing called public domain, those items that are developed by the federal government that are not confidential or classified are open and available to the public. And all you have to do is to write a request under the Freedom of Information Act to the DOD Fire Academy at Goodfellow Air Force Base and request that information about those programs, and you can bring that back to your community. Unfortunately, many of our states are not IFSAC or Pro Board certified for the driver operator courses, or at least not to that degree, but they are free. And all you have to do is ask for them. And again, it was very well said, each of us has to take responsibility for our own actions and forget the idea that it's our constitutional right from time to time to be stupid and do the right thing.
Thanks for being here, Bill.
I really appreciate what you guys are doing. You got a great panel up here, and I hope to see all of you
in
Dallas.
One parade would solve a lot of problems.
Yeah. Well, please come to Dallas in September. We'd love to see you there. It's one of the finest programs, and it is indeed an honor to be here with you folks today, and it's really a privilege to serve as the president of the premier fire service leadership organization in the
Chief
world.
Chief Bill Killen of the IFC. You. Thank you, Bill.
To note now that the IAFC has an excellent program. If you go to their website,
well, we'll link it. We'll link it on the show.
We'll link it on the show. An excellent driver drill type of program that Kevin Roach and Mike Weider came up with. They did an excellent job with that program, and that would make for a good drill time with that program.
You know, it isn't that hard. You can't drive a apparatus without certification. Sometimes people just need to say that, and that's the way it's going to be. Oh, they'll quit. You know what? Quit. If you're going to quit because we're going to have regulations on our fire department, leave. We're not going to miss you. Let's talk about something involving the volunteer fire service. The other night at dinner, we're sitting there just basically, the four of us, just kind of BSing as we do, talking about whatever is hot, whatever is not. And John said to me, he says, Billy, what do you think is the weakest link? Or he commented, what is the weakest link in the volunteer fire service? And we bantered around a little bit, and quite honestly, the weakest link in the volunteer fire service may very well be the election of officers. Volunteer fire departments...
Look at all the heads.
Yes, right. Yeah. Nod your heads by clapping if you agree with that being an issue. and I've served under some outstanding elected volunteer chiefs. Don't get me wrong. And I know here's an elected volunteer fire chief right here. I mean, we've all been through this. But it also can create a nightmare, and has. And that's what we're going to talk about a little bit. And I'm going to start with John Salka. John and I were talking about the same table the other night, and it's an issue. You know, you can have a great fire chief up there, but then there's an election. And he's out in 2 years, or she's out in 2 years. I was just out in Ocean Beach out on Fire Island visiting out there. Terry and I took a few days off. And the Ocean Beach Fire Department fire chief, 20 years, an elected volunteer chief, 20 years. He's a good chief, but the fact is he's had 20 years to lead this fire department and turn it around. But there's so many safety, survival issues, training, qualifications. John, why do you think it's such a problem, electing volunteer fire chiefs?
Well, the problem, number one, is it's not just electing volunteer fire chiefs.
Well, lieutenants, captains.
It's electing volunteer fire officers, from lieutenant, captain, and whatever your other ranks may be, assistant chiefs, all the way up the line. Company officers in general, and company officers in particular, are the most important people in the fire department in many ways. Yes, the chauffeurs and the drivers are, as Chief Killen just said, but the company officers are the ones that get the job done. For those of you that were in my class this morning talking about new boss, new rules, that's what I talked about being a company officer. You can't get anything done unless you have some leadership skills, unless you have some ability, unless you have some tactical skills, unless you have some people skills. And the guy that can buy the most beers or the most cups of coffee, it's not quite so dramatic that it's all about alcohol or anything, but it certainly is more about popularity than it should be. It should be more about skills and about talents and about abilities. I visited and trained a small volunteer fire department up in Connecticut on my Get Out of Line program. And while I was there, I discovered quite quickly, they almost were acting like a career professional department. I discovered quite quickly that they had a different way of selecting officers. And it's just like a regular job opening. When a lieutenant retires or leaves or moves away, he submits his name to the chief, he resigns, the chief puts up a notice in every firehouse, lieutenant's position opening.
Just like a quid.
Right. Here's the application, fill them out, send them to the chief. You send your application in, that's just the start. They do an interview of the three or the five or four or the five candidates. After an interview, whoever gets past the interview, they proceed to tactical training. They go out to the rock with an engine and a truck, and they tell a guy, to their training division. And they say, take that engine and put a foam line in operation. And take that truck and put the master stream in operation. And when you get all done with that, they're evaluated, and then they give them either a final interview or there is a two or three step process here. That when they were finally done, they ended up with a smaller group of candidates, and then the chief and an assistant and one of the selected line officers and a commissioner. It was a small group of people made a selection, and that guy was appointed to the job of lieutenant or captain or whatever the job was, and he held that job till he gave it up.
In the parking lot, John, I saw a chief's car. It said "professional" right here in Baltimore, professionally served by volunteers, and a lot of departments put that kind of stuff on their rigs. But this is an example, and if you don't mind, I'm going to mention the name of the department, right? Was Nichols of Trumbull, right? Was Nichols,
yeah, fire? Absolutely.
Professional volunteer fire. I've known some of those guys for years. and it is a professional fire department.
And that's just the start.
By volunteers.
Just selecting officers in a professional manner like that is just the start of improving your fire department. Then your training is going to be better, your tactical operations are going to be better, your people management skills are going to be better, everything is going to improve, the value of the whole organization is going to improve, and you will be shocked. And again, I've worked under many excellent elected volunteer fire officers, but those would be the same guys that put the application in and would be part of that other process anyway. When I, suggesting that we're going to go outside and hire people.
No, but they last longer. They be in office
absolutely.
Longer.
Absolutely. More stability. Yep.
Mike Dugan?
I was a volunteer for many years, and I lost an election because the guy I was running against, his girlfriend dumped him a week before the election. And everybody said, well, he needs a little positive reinforcement, and he got the job.
Wait a minute. Has that anything similar to that happened in your fire departments? Just say yes or no. Yes?
Yeah,
yeah, of course. Absolutely. It's like the crazy uncle in the basement. Don't talk about it. But it's a real issue.
And it's you know, again, the fire service, it's not popularity, because in the volunteer fire service, I don't care whether you can buy the most coffee, the donuts, you've got the biggest backyard with the best swimming pool, and we all get there. It's who's going to bring you home after every run that it's all about. It's who's going to take you and protect you in that situation, in that fire scene. Who is the guy who goes to the trainings? Who is the guy who does the trainings? Who is the guy who shows up and does the right thing? It's not always popular, and we all know that. Listen, if a guy says, you know, and the chiefs have done it, no more beer in the firehouse. If it's not popular, then that's not, if it's right, it's right. If it's not, then there's something wrong.
Anybody in the audience want to comment? You don't have to say where you're from, and they can't trace your voice. So come on up. We're going to go to Mike Wilbur in a second.
When I was a state fire instructor, I was teaching a basic firefighter class at a firehouse one time. And while I was there, like the second meeting, the chief of that fire department came up to me and said, hey, John, do you think I could sit in on a couple of classes? I said, for what? I never got this. Mm-hmm. I never took the basic firefighter
chief.
Class. And of course, I never took anything else after that either. The other guy was the chief riding around in a red car asking me to sign his essential certificate, which was
obscene. I think that's another issue. What kind of qualifications does your volunteer organization require, A, to become a company officer, and B, to become chief? And in a lot of cases, there's not any requirements. And how many of your departments have chiefs that are now retreads?
Second or third time around.
Second or third time
around,
because nobody else wants to do it. But what happens with the leadership there? You're chief now, you get out for two or three or four years, or two or three or four terms, you come back, there's no continuity, and anything that you may have gotten started back 4 years ago may not necessarily be there now. And one of the things that I learned being a volunteer firefighter, it takes a long time to get the organization to run well. And it takes inside of months. If you get the wrong leadership, this thing can go to hell.
Right out the window. Right out the window.
Right out the window.
Tom Kennedy told me when I made battalion chief, he said it takes you 5 years. Battalion chief in the FDNY. He told me it's going to take you 5 years to really get your legs, to fully develop yourself as a chief. And when I was a chief of Supplement Grove, I was a chief for 2 years. Obviously, I was an assistant chief for 2 years before that, but I wasn't the actual chief until I got to the top. I was the first year and your last year. You were there for 2 years. You didn't figure out you were the chief.
But you weren't the first year, now you're lame duck the second
year. That's right.
You know, and you hear, I remember when they were working on some standards, 1500 and some other stuff, and everybody and their brother, a lot of them in walkers and on oxygen, went down to the NFPA meetings to scream saying that these regulations are going to ruin the volunteer fire service. And I'm listening to you guys talk and us talk about this issue, and I can picture those folks screaming that regulation and taking that away and having standards and training for the fire chief is just going to create more problems. The biggest problem in the volunteer fire service is the volunteer fire service. Our own issues, we create our own problems. We make it where we don't want to come around the firehouse. We make it where we don't feel welcome. And if you look deep into a fire department, that's why people aren't coming around, not your regulations, not your training. If you have good training on a regular basis, once a week, twice a week, the members want that. That's why they have the shirts and the jackets. If you have decent leaders who have a clue, have been to some trainings, that treat you right, they want that. More regulation isn't, you hear them say, they're going to regulate out the volunteer fire service. It's a bunch of horseshit.
Absolute nonsense,
because the volunteer fire service, what they're doing is they're unregulating themselves out of business, because when something happens and they go back and they say, let me see your records on your training, your driver incident, and everything else, and you go, All right, get that folder. Where is that? Yeah, and they pull out this folder and they blow the dust off it and they hand it to the attorney. He adds a couple of zeros to the end of the lawsuit because that's what's happening. And if you don't keep the records, if you don't have an idea, a basis to back up what you do, then you don't have any foundation to stand on.
Does anybody here in the volunteer fire department have any training requirements before you can run for lieutenant, or training requirements, course requirements? You do in Montgomery, you guys do in the frontier. We were that in my volunteer fire department. You had to run, you had to get like the New York State engine company operation before you could run for engine officer. You had to get truck and engine to run for captain. And then you had to get maybe an incident command class or two to run for chief. Even though it was what I consider the faulty election process, at least it had some basis of some qualifications.
Got a young man came up to the mic. You can or do not have to tell us who you are, where you're from.
Sure, I'm
tell
Dave
us what
from
you do.
Carmel, New York, in Putnam County. The whole county up there is completely 100% volunteer.
Okay. Where is this, Putnam County?
Putnam County.
Which is a suburb of New York City.
Yep.
Go ahead.
45 minutes from the city. Any type of officer to step up to lieutenant, you have to have an intro to fire officer and just a basic fire course, your essentials, pretty much your firefighter survival. Anything from up there, you move up with the incident command system, NIMS, all your training like that you need to take. To be a driver, like we were talking about drivers before, you need to have like your engine company, your ladder company.
And that's all ruined your fire department, right?
Yep, that's the way it's mandated.
No, it's ruined them.
To an extent, you get less qualified people every year. You come up for election, you get maybe one, two people running.
But you're still in business.
Still in business.
And you have more qualified people leading it, which leads to better people leading your fires, which means you're probably going to be safer.
Yep, runs so, a lot.
Duh. Efficient. I mean, this is a big duh. Why definitely. Wouldn't you do that? Were you in the department before they had these regulations? Have you always had them?
No,
it's always been that way.
Used to be that it was just pretty much the good old boy type of thing. Everybody would do their thing. But as the years progress and as all the technology increases, everything's been.
Who made that decision? Did the members decide we're going to change? Did the board of commissioners say you're going
to
change?
It started from the chief's office. Chief's office wanted to make the, the move to that, make everybody more efficient. Everybody cover yourself.
Just and this was a chief who had gotten in that did not have to have qualifications, but decided at some point we're going to start having qualifications.
Yep, he was proactive. He went
outstanding.
Straight from
any other departments doing stuff like that? Anybody else here have requirements for your volunteer fire department? Come on up. We got one more. Hurry up. This is live.
In my volunteer fire department, they asked a lot of us to go back and take it so that they asked the guys in offices, company officers, to go back and take the classes.
That way...
Everybody now had it, and then it's across the board, and the chief said, listen, here's what I want to do. If I get all of you guys to go back and take it, then everybody coming up has to have it because the guys have already had it, and it worked out great. And everybody said, sure, no problem.
You know, in Ohio, where I'm from, by law, a career firefighter must have firefighter 1 and 2. It's the law. You have no choice, okay? And so when I moved out there, I had to, challenge and take the test and all that kind of stuff. And this year, we just tried to get some standards passed for the volunteers, and you'd have thought it was the end of the world.
Well, that's what happened to the driving.
It's not just Ohio, it's everywhere. Yeah.
That's what happened to the driving.
Go ahead.
My name's Bob Arndt. I'm from a small combination department down in Georgia. What we've done, for many years, we were...
That is the best
voting.
Georgia accent I've ever heard.
Georgia.
I'm implanted.
Okay, go ahead.
For many years, it was the vote on, the officers were voted in, chiefs ran for a couple years after elections, lieutenants were voted in almost every year, and that basically became an ineffective way to do business. What we have gone to now is that all our officers, our apparatus operators, senior firemen actually have to fall in line with the requirements that we hold for our career staff. And the selection process to be advanced is actually ran by the career fire chief, and that the volunteers are held to that standard that our career folks are. Now, on the same thing, there's the tradition part that we're all aware of, and our volunteer body had a big issue with giving the career guys, that tug inside a combination department. You don't want to give the career guys too much power because they'll wipe you out. And so what we ended up doing is we maintained elections for volunteer positions as far as like secretary, treasurer, president, vice president, administrative side,
right.
The fundraising stuff, the non-fire related aspect of a volunteer department, we still have elected officers for the spending of volunteer funds, so on and so forth. It's still an officer type, an election type program. but anything fire ground related and operations and holding an actual rank within the fire department, because like any combination department tries to do, you know, we try not to difference our volunteer officers from our career officers. So now we're all held to one standard. And it met a lot of resistance, and it's about 3 years into it now. It's starting to work itself out.
It just isn't that.
I think it was a good idea.
Well, you know, when you were speaking, I'm thinking, what would you say to an audience or a department that would like to do this or think about it? And it's not the department as much, but you say to a fire chief, you say to a lieutenant, you say to a captain, if something goes wrong, what do you have to back up the fact that you're in this position? In other words, how are you going to answer? And people say, well, how are you going to answer the attorney? How are you going to answer the judge? How are you going to answer the family? Okay, of that firefighter, of that, you know, where you guys could rescue some kids out, because if you've been in my program, you've seen the chainsaw massacre clip I used. How do you justify that? So when departments listening to our show are saying, well, you know, we like to do it at the ABC Volunteer Fire Department, how do we do it? The basis to start that is, how do you justify your position if someone would ask you what qualifies you to be a fire officer? Through the smoke, I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. We're with Mike Dugan, John Salka, and Mike Wilbur, and a live audience. You alive? And we're right back.
Welcome to the latest edition of Through the Smoke with Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, addressing issues impacting all firefighters' safety, health, and morale.
We're live in Baltimore. This is Through the Smoke. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder, with my friends and guests, Mike Dugan, John Salka, Mike Wilbur, and our live audience. A couple comments from our audience, some comments regarding the election of officers in the volunteer fire service. We got a couple audience members, we're gonna talk about that, and then we've asked a couple of our audience members to comment, and our panel's gonna comment back. What do you love about being in your fire department? If you were the chief, what would you change? What are you here to talk about?
I'm from a department in Long Island that has three firehouses, and there's some very experienced guys who want to be chiefs and have been officers, but due to popularity or lack of it, other people won't vote them in, so less experienced people get voted in. We have captains who just only want to be chief, so they're kind of like a lame duck. They don't do any training. They don't do anything for safety, and just answering the questions is like a big deal for them. So it's kind of like a morale breaker for somebody like myself who just wants to work and somebody who just wants to help people.
You're dying for a leader.
Yeah.
You want someone to lead you.
And you know, now to the point where we have some young guys who don't have any fire experience, which there's not too many fires in our department, where the guys who won't be elected because they're not popular, they don't even want to respond because they feel they're feeling danger with these young guys who have no fire experience. So the next election is going to be a mess. Chiefs who shouldn't be chief are becoming chief. Officers who should be captains aren't being elected. So guys who have half a brain who know it's all about safety, you know, it's a little scary. So guys like me are forced to become officers because we don't.
I mean, you're being forced, but at least it's going to put you in a position to maybe start fixing something.
Right, yeah. I mean, you know, somebody like me who's a volunteer, I'm the boss at work, but in the fire service, it's kind of nice being in the back seat and just doing, but you know, now I
get your commissioners. You need to get your commissioners or whoever the overriding control board is of your department. You need to get some of them. Unfortunately, most of them are usually ex-chiefs of the volunteer department,
right,
and then they become commissioners later on, so they're all pretty happy with status quo. I'm not judging your folks,
sure.
But those are the guys that are more legally responsible and more able to change that, and maybe they can get an idea, like looking at this place from Connecticut or the article that I guess you're going to have to write about, you know, selecting fire officers.
And, you know, the last point, like most departments, there's only maybe 12 guys in each house that are active or 15 guys, but when it's election time, the old-timers, and, you know, the houses that have 70 guys come out, they have all the chiefs. So.
Another issue, but as if you're going to be an officer, you start it with one, and then you get somebody who says, look what he's doing, how great this is, and then you got two. And then somebody
come up on Sundays and we're doing tool training. It's unofficial. We're doing tool training. Next week we're doing a host tool. Next week we're doing ladders. Yep. Next we're doing engine company. And they'll start.
Well, you know what they'll expect of the other guys, and the guys that don't really want to work will maybe throw it away.
You got to start at the bottom, and you got to work it up cyclically to make your fire department better.
Every time I go to work, I'm the captain of 123, and I love being a 123, but if I'm working overtime, wherever I'm working, it's going to be the best company that company can be that night, because I'm there, and those men are going to be working with me that night. The same thing with your volunteer department. You get on that rig, and you've got the side of that department. You are representing your town, where you live. It's the best it can be, because you're there, and you make that difference.
Right. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
I think that's an important point. I think not only for you, but each one of my colleagues up here, the reason that they do what they do is because they have a firm belief that one person can make a difference in this business. And if you believe that in your heart of hearts, we all started from very humble roots, volunteer departments. My first training assignment was a training officer.
And we're discouraged in many cases by, oh, slow down, shut up, don't get involved, don't worry about it, you know.
Yeah, one guy can make a difference, but like in the fire service, I think I read it in your magazine, the fire service sometimes advances one retirement at a time.
Well, that's fine.
That's fine. And if that's what it takes, that's but fine. Again, you're building your volunteer department for your sons, your daughters.
One generation plants the trees, and the next generation enjoys the shade.
The wise people say, remember why we're here. Remember why we joined.
That's right.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
Next one, what's up?
I'm a volunteer firefighter from Pennsylvania. I had the opportunity to serve in my local hometown department for 17 years and was eventually elected as chief of the department. I spent 2 years in that position. Our fire department was very lucky to have a large influx of young members on a regular basis, and we had a very large staff and were very active. Through my years as a company officer, we didn't get a lot of input from our chief officers at the time and took a lot of things upon ourselves in training and stepped the department up as much as we could within that environment. When I was able to become chief, we took that to the next level, and I used several of the captains, lieutenants, and even firefighters that I've been working with to try to improve the department and put them into key positions. Since I was elected chief, I was given the authority to appoint whoever I wanted to
That's a whole different twist.
Company officer.
Where the chief
positions.
Is elected, but then you appoint who you want.
So it's like you brought your whole administration. And I right. basically did that. And that did not work to my advantage from election time, 24 months later.
Yeah.
I hear all of you, and I hear the gentleman talking about the truck training program, and I think it's easy for all of us to say, well, hey, you're the chief, go get it done. But you have to be very careful in how you play the politics, because are older groups in many departments across the country that will come back and snatch that power away from you if you push it too hard.
And again, that to me, it's a department and might be a bylaws issue and everything else. I know some departments, some volunteer departments are saying, if you don't make a certain number of calls every year, you can't vote. Okay? If you don't make a percentage what's the retirement now?
Your LOSAP.
Like the LOSAP. If you don't make a LOSAP percentage, you can't vote. And once you become a life member and no longer respond to fires, you can't vote because you don't know what's going on that fire department, and you are voting just because, hey, is that John Salka's kid running? Oh, yeah, and he's running against Billy Goldfeder's kid, and I don't really like Goldfeder, I like Salka, so I'm going to vote for Salka's kid. And, you know, that's the way things go. And you get some of these guys, like they said, the Blue Hair Brigade, they go into the early bird special and they're heading to the fire department to vote before they go out for the 5 p.m. special. And
it can ruin the department.
It can change the whole outcome of the election.
I was at a department in Delaware. They had 300 members show up on election night. They have 40 active firefighters.
Unbelievable. And like what you were just talking about with the training, how you had good company officers, but the chief wasn't too involved in training. When I became the chief in my very small little volunteer fire department, one of the first things I did, because I was on a job in New York City and I was a lieutenant at the time and everything else, one of the first things I did was I put up a training schedule. Guys used to show up every Wednesday night. We didn't even know what we were going to train on. I put up a training schedule for 3 months, for the quarter. Every Wednesday night, it was listed. Ladders, engines, rope, foam, this, that. And I appointed a lieutenant for each of those nights. So it was the engine lieutenant did this drill, the truck lieutenant did that drill. So not only did I give them a responsibility for it, but everybody, all the firefighters knew, I'm not going to miss a drill next week. It's foam. I don't know anything about foam. So little, tiny, silly, easy stuff is great.
Thank you very much. What's up?
Actually, Mike just touched on it. That's exactly. We just changed our election process in our fire department that only active members can vote for our officers instead of the knife and forkers.
Turkey dinner firemen. We used to call them turkey dinner firemen. They show up only when there's free food.
Well, and you know, the turkey dinner firemen, the knife and forkers, were great in their day.
Absolutely.
You don't miss them. They still get a jacket. They still get a sticker.
And they're still great. They come around, but they can't vote for officers because they're not riding the rig.
Can't impact the safety of our personnel. That's really what we're talking
they
about.
They can do the social part in our fire department, but they can't do the firematic.
So how'd you get that passed? Was it tough?
It was tough. I've been working on it for a few years. Like good, you said, I'm the chief, I can start making changes. It's tough to get everybody to go along with you on your
that's
idea.
That's a worthwhile though. Change. If you do nothing else, that's a worthwhile change.
It's a
that's
salesman right. Job.
What's up, bro? Come on up.
I'm Sean from the South Jersey Fire Department.
Okay.
I totally agree with you guys. Well, I agree with the concept. I think it is a popularity contest within the volunteers. I've been there. I've been chief. I think New Jersey is starting to get the hang of it. Acting Governor Cody passed executive order that made in 2008 all chief officers had to be I-400.
I just heard this the other day.
Yeah. That's our, everyone right now, at this year, all officers have to be I-200, which is the basic level, then 300 and 400 for deputies assistants, and then your chief has to be 400 by the end of the year. So I think we're in the right direction, but it's hard to change. I mean, you guys had good comments with the like membership always voting. But who's voting for bylaw changes is the life members.
Yeah. So
you have to convince them it's the right thing. It's real difficult. And
that's, well, we're talking about the people who are impacting our ability to go home. I mean, it's really the bottom line. And that's what your fire department has to decide. Who's going to lead me? I'm not talking about leading me at the barbecue or leading me about even buying new apparatus to some extent, with due respect to the apparatus purchasing. But I'm talking about the people who, when we get on the fire, who's going to be barking orders to tell me what to do. That's the issue.
And I'm not taking them out of voting for anything else out of the department, spending their money or anything else.
Right.
I'm just taking them out of the voting for officers, for line officers and chiefs. Okay, they can vote whether the barbecue is going to be at point A or point B, or whether we're going to spend money on a dinner here or a dinner here or whatever else. I'm not talking about taking away all of their rights. They're all, if you are not riding on the rig, you do not know how these people behave at a fire, and you do not know what's going on. So if you are voting for them, you should have the knowledge of how they act at a fire. You should have a certain idea a number of times at that fire.
Thank you very much. Come on up, man. What's up? Can't hear you without the mic.
For the next segment.
Come on, yeah, just come up. We're going to switch gears. Okay, next subject. What he's talking about, for those of you listening, is we just asked a couple of them to come up and tell us why they love being in their fire department, but if they were the chief, what would they change? Something to that effect. What's your comments?
All right, what I love about my fire department is basically the brotherhood of it, camaraderie that the fellow members share, the small town feel to it. We are a fairly small department, and just what we provide to the community, being out there in the community, helping the people that need help.
You're proud of your colors.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. But then there's departments where guys only wear the jackets, so there's a big difference.
If I were the chief, one of the key things I would change is we have a big problem about writing one thing and doing another.
Oh, that's not a problem anywhere else. It's really unique to your department.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
selective enforcement, I think.
Yeah, it's almost like selective hearing with your wives, but it applies.
Don't talk about our wives. You don't know.
Well, my wife, selective hearing with my wife, but it applies. We have if you look at our SOPs or SOGs, whatever we're calling them this month. And look at it on paper, you know, we're AJ squared away department, you know, can't do nothing wrong. But when that tone drops and it's that occasional structure fire, and you go to the scene, and if you were to bring out those SOGs and kind of look at them and look at what we're doing, there's a large discrepancy. And I guess I'd work on that. I know our current staff is trying to work on that, but they're kind of old school. So,
you know, my partner on my website, firefighterclosecalls.com, Gordon Graham, who's retiring tonight, by the way, from California Highway Patrol. Gordon has, who's an attorney, very well respected in the risk management field. Gordon has a statement. He says, if you have SOPs, follow them to a T. If not, get rid of them. You're better off without them.
Nah.
But if you've got policies and procedures, and in my department, Lowland Sims, this summer we had a college intern come in, and his job is to work with the officers weekly. We have weekly officers meetings all summer long. We're rewriting every policy procedure and it must match what we do, or we're not going to have the policy. In other words, because we had some of that too, and our chief acknowledged that. That, you know what, we can't say this and not do that and that kind of thing. So that's sort of what you're talking about. And that's not unique. I think about everybody here has got a situation like that at their fire department. I'm sure probably even in the city. This is the policy, but this is how we do it.
Well, we have rules, and then we have rules.
Which one are you talking about, though?
We have a rule that says don't get in an accident backing up, because as little as company officers that Mike Dugan or Mike Wilbur can do to absolve our chauffeur of any kind of wrongdoing. We have five individuals, including ourselves, that are supposed to get off our butts and help back the truck up. So as company officers, there's little we can do or say. The driver could be our best friend, but that's not going to cut it. But yet in New York City Fire Department, we have a rule that says that you must wear a seatbelt. And on a very good day in the city of New York, we may get a compliance level of maybe 1%. So it depends what rule you want to enforce and how you want to do that. And I call that selective enforcement.
Good luck.
Thank you, guys.
And yeah, we'll see if we can help you. If you have any questions, let us know. And our last person, what's up?
What's up? My name's Trey. I'm from Weaverville, North Carolina.
You got the Georgia guy's accent. Something's going on. Stole it.
Can't help.
Especially from Wisconsin.
There we go.
Basically, what I want to talk about, it's related to what the current subject is, but it kind of covers all the fields that we covered today. To give you a little background where I'm from, we throughout the recent history of our fire department, on the emergency side of the house, has been an excellent organization. No worries when the emergency comes in. It was the in-house stuff that was really all the hell.
Well, now you say emergencies, you're doing well, so that means you're training on a regular basis? You
yes,
got
sir.
Some good officers and stuff? Okay, good.
Yes, sir. And within the last 2.5 to 3 years, we've got, I call it professional accountability. It's been, I guess you'd say, instituted in our department. And what that means to me is we've been, due to some changes in the department, we've started being held accountable for not only the emergency operations, but also the way we conduct ourselves in-house as far as the professionalism and the training and stuff like that. We talk about these elections for the promotions and everything, and I started as a volunteer, so I know how that side of the house is. But at the same time, we had one gentleman talk about the pissing contest between career and volunteer. It's not about us. It's not about career or volunteer. When we're here to serve a citizen, it doesn't matter whether you're paid or not. The same service has to be provided. And the professional accountability, as I call it, is a really good thing. It comes down to getting officers in place that are going to hold everybody around them accountable for their actions, because it doesn't matter if you're paid or volunteer. It doesn't matter if you like it or not. We have a service to provide to our citizens, and that's what it's all about at the end of the day. That's pretty much what I got to say.
How's morale at your department?
It's excellent. It's the best.
That's great to hear.
And, you know, one of the things with that is that in your department, your people, your department, your people coming in. When I went into my volunteer department as an 18-year-old kid, they gave me my jacket. Man, proud to wear this jacket. And the one guy said, don't ever, ever, ever go out, be drunk, be disorderly, or get into a fight wearing our jacket, our shirt, or anything else. Respect your department. Respect the way it is. One of my pet peeves is baseball caps on guys backwards, on duty, in uniform. People have died to wear the uniform, whatever uniform it is. If you want to wear a pink Yankees cap backwards, even though I love the Yankees, that's fine, okay? But if you are wearing a fire department hat, wear it right. If you are wearing your company's t-shirt and you got a painting business, and it's covered with paint, go out and spend $20 and buy yourself a sleeve of white t-shirts and wear them. Because you don't want to look like, you know, if you're changing the oil in that t-shirt, don't go out at the public in that t-shirt, because you're representing your department. When you represent it professionally at all times, because it's where you're from. It's what you have pride in.
I mean, it sounds like you got a good place to run, a good firehouse. Good department, and there's good pride there, and that's a good thing. Thanks for your comments.
Yes,
we appreciate
thank
it.
You.
You're listening to Through the Smoke live at Firehouse Expo in Baltimore. We'll be right back.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Well, we're going to wrap it up here in Baltimore at Firehouse Expo. We've had a great time. The week is fantastic. If you've never made it to Firehouse Expo, you're missing a fantastic week with some great folks. This is Through the Smoke. I'm your host, Billy. Billy Goldfeder.
As big as a house.
And my guests this week are my friends, Captain Mike Dugan, Battalion Chief John Sarka, Lieutenant Mike Wilbur from FDNY. I want to thank our regular producer, Eric Smith, as well as Dave Iannone, Chris Hebert, and Pete Matthews from Firehouse.com. Be sure to check out the websites. The links are right here. John Sarka at www.firecommandtraining.com. Mike Wilbur, www.emergencyvehiclerespondse.com. Correct, Mike?
Yes.
And Mike Dugan, nyfiretraining.com. That's N period Y period, firetraining.com. The links are on the website right here. Check them out. There's lots of good free information. And Sippy, you better start behaving. Thank you, everybody.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio. Thank you.